The network children ask for by name. The Defenestrate Media Network.
What happens when mixtapes meet memes? This is Gen Zex. Join JM Bell and Braxton Bunnell as they break down the news, music, movies, trends, and moments that shape Gen X and the world Gen Z is creating right now. We're judging the worlds that raised us, from landlines to smartphones. This is Gen Zex. The culture that was versus the culture that's trending.
I am not at all sure where we start with this one. When I'm flipping on the left show, I have something to say. There's a way we open when we start the comic book show. You know, JC has a little monologue that he does on his introductions. We don't have that yet, and I don't know where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any ideas? By all means, write them down.
Okay, I will. I've been trying to kind of think about it. Because it does feel like we just kind of like pick up in a conversation like as soon as it starts. But I mean, like, not opposed to that. I feel like this is a very casual podcast.
Yeah. We did with the Left Show for years. The guys had come into the room when we were all recording together pre-COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody would come in and they'd all sit down and they'd all crack a beer and they'd just start talking. And I'd just reach over and start recording and I wouldn't tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so every episode for 3-4 years just started with easing into a conversation. And it wasn't until I would start talking about the news that anybody had any idea that we'd started yet. So... You know, I don't mind coming in the middle of a conversation. It's then it becomes, how do we get the conversation started?
Yeah, that's true.
What should we say? I don't know. Most days, I just don't know.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, nobody expects you to know everything.
I do. We're gonna talk about that a little later when we get to my segment about how I'm a little bit hard on myself for reasons. And my movie today, it'll explain quite a bit.
Okay.
When we get to it. But in the meantime, I went first last week, so you get to go first this week.
All right.
And I'm excited because I had a lot of fun with this one.
Mm-hmm. This is this will be a little bit of an exercise for me, trying to keep my talk on my movie short.
No, don't worry about it. As long as you want to go, it's digital. It's not costing me a penny.
That's true.
We're not burning film here.
All right, let's get into it. So, going back to the what feels like forever ago year of 2019.
That was 24 years ago.
Yeah, it was approximately 140 years ago.
Yep.
And also yesterday at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
In U.S. politics, the House voted to impeach President Trump in December for abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. We see how that went.
Works every time.
Oh, yeah. Every single time. Avengers Endgame becomes the highest grossing film of all time.
Brilliant.
Which, like, yeah, they, you know, spent years building up to that and have been a little bit fumbling ever since to get it back. But, you know. The Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris suffered severe damage from a fire in April.
I recall that.
And coming out, oh, I don't have the exact, let me grab it.
No, you're good.
Coming out in May 31st in the United States, Godzilla King of the Monsters drops to what I assume was a meh from everybody else and extreme excitement from me and my friend group.
I when this movie came out, I enjoyed it quite a bit. I liked Godzilla, mm-hmm. the first one with the Scarlet Witch in it. But I did, and you know, I call that the Dark Godzilla because that one's hard to see.
Oh yeah, yeah. They must have messed up something on the digital file or edit or whatever, because it is just so unbearably dark.
Yeah.
On the original like Blu-ray release, that when they did the 4K release, I generally don't upgrade, but I got rid of my Blu-ray release and got the 4K because I heard it was easier to watch.
Okay. So yeah, this one had young Millie Bobby Brown in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been impressed with her as an actor since the first time I saw her on Stranger Things.
Oh yeah, I never caught the boat on Stranger Things. I got about halfway through the first season and decided that I didn't care, so I stopped watching it.
It got better.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, I'm sure I'll give it another shot at some point.
Yeah, it's like Star Trek. It gets really good at season 3.
Yeah. but yeah, Millie Bobby Brown, Kyle Chandler, Sally Hawkins, Charles Dance as the main antagonist outside of the Titans.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I'm not wrong, am I? He's Tyrion Lannister.
I believe he is, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I love Godzilla. I would say out of the media franchises that I've consumed over the years, Godzilla will always remain my favorite. This movie is very important to me because this was the first Godzilla movie I saw in an actual theater.
Oh.
I got to 2014 late. I saw 2014 in a double feature at the Redwood Drive-In.
Mm-hmm.
And the other movie was Adam Sandler's Blended.
Okay.
So I went with a friend. Her and her mom wanted to see Blended. I wanted to see Godzilla, so it kind of worked out. But then I did have to sit through Adam Sandler's Blended.
No.
It's fine. It's an Adam Sandler comedy. You know, does what it says on the tin.
You know what? And when they make me laugh, I feel bad about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at you, Happy Gilmore 2.
Yeah, I have a massive respect for Adam Sandler because he came out and did Uncut Gems just to show that he could do an award-winning serious role and hasn't done one again since.
Yeah, Punch Drunk Love?
Mm-hmm.
That was him. It's like every decade or so he does a serious movie to prove that he has the chops.
Oh, yeah, he does a serious movie. It always does insanely well because I think Punch Drunk Love won some awards. I don't know what it was. I know Uncut Gems won an Oscar for something. Anyway, Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yes, sorry.
Fantastic. No, it's fine. Godzilla King of the Monsters. Fantastic movie. What I really love about the MonsterVerse as a whole, and in particular the Godzilla films, is I love the design of the legendary series MonsterVerse Godzilla. He always reminds me of my little pit bull because he's got that kind of short snout.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I also love that it really heavily leans into Godzilla as the balance.
Yes.
Because we've seen Godzilla as a villain, we've seen Godzilla as a friend, we've seen him as a force of nature. I really enjoy that, especially in this movie, it just leans into, Godzilla's here to keep everybody else in check.
And he might be a little smushy on some of your stuff.
Mm-hmm. But is it that? Do you want that, or do you want to like have the end of all of humanity?
I really like my stuff, Braxton.
Yeah, but then you're not around to like enjoy your stuff.
That's fair. All right. You win that one by a whisker.
But yeah, it has one of my favorite kaiju in it, Rodan. It does so much with, like, kind of humanizing the Titans a little bit. Like, one of my favorite shots in the movie is when Rodan's just waking up and he comes out of the volcano and it does that really quick zoom in on his face.
Yes.
And he kind of like tilts his head. There's one later on towards the end where it's between the final battle where Godzilla's fighting Ghidorah and Mothra's fighting Rodan. And Godzilla knocks Ghidorah on the ground and Ghidorah notices the power plant next to him. And so he grabs it in his mouth and charges up with the electricity. And Godzilla does this little like head tilt and like raises an eyebrow like he's confused. And it really, it plays around with Godzilla like as a character in a way that really reminds me of the Showa era where we were getting really kind of goofy with it. With still the rubber suits.
Mm-hmm.
Plot was kind of secondary to monster fights.
I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I don't have a problem with that.
No, it's... I have said since I watched Godzilla versus Kong that you could go on YouTube and type Godzilla versus Kong best moments and have the exact same experience as watching the whole movie.
That's because fair.
It feels so, the plot just feels so fast paced and so like quick and all over the place that it's kind of difficult to follow. It doesn't really make a ton of sense. But I mean, Godzilla movies don't need to make sense. You're there to watch Godzilla. And Godzilla will always be a very important thing in my life. It is how I stayed in touch with some of my friends from high school. We mm-hmm. got together over one summer and watched every single Godzilla movie.
Brilliant.
I've been a massive fan just ever since.
Well, I don't. If you don't mind if I share a little in your time.
Yeah.
When I was a wee tot, there was a theater, a multiplex theater down by our house. This was, 82, 83, 84. And your parents could give them $5 and then leave you there for 6 hours. If not longer, sometimes upwards of eight. Yeah, and basically you got to see three movies. And one of them was always like a Laurel and Hardy type thing. One of them was usually more modern, but still late 50s, early 60s type of stuff. And then one of them was always a Godzilla movie.
Mm.
And those were my favorites, considering, you know, the other ones that we had to watch. I just fucking loved the Godzilla movies. I don't have them encyclopedic like you do. I don't, you know, it's like, I'm a fan. You're a fan. And, but whenever one comes on, I remember, you know, I can probably figure out what's going to happen next, though. That's, let's be honest, it's not usually that hard with some of them, you know? And so I remember having watched these over summer days for 3 years of, you know, my parents just abandoning us at a theater, and how much I still love the theater experience. It was fun. You got three movies. You got a popcorn at the beginning, before the second, before the third. And then you got a soda that you could refill with water.
Mm-hmm.
And it was $5 and your parents got rid of you. It was every Tuesday and Thursday down at the Mann Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've loved Godzilla since I was a wee tot, since I was about 10.
Yeah, and it's right now is like an amazing time to be a Godzilla fan. We've been eating good for the last couple of years with Shin Godzilla, Godzilla Minus One,
yep,
all the MonsterVerse stuff.
Monarch
is so good. Godzilla Minus Zero coming up later this year.
Yep.
Very excited for that one. But yeah, between the release of Final Wars in 2004 and 2014, when Godzilla 2014 came out, there were no Godzilla movies.
Oh.
He made an appearance in a film in 2007 called Always Sunset on 3rd Street. He just kind of shows up like on the TV. He's in a couple of funny scenes. Like there's a scene where they're like, there's a couple arguing outside at what looks kind of like a, like an apartment building.
Mm-hmm,
and mm-hmm. a dude in a Godzilla suit bursts through the door and like looks to both sides and then runs away. And it's never explained.
I like that. When was the Matthew Broderick one?
That was 1998.
Oh, Jesus, I'm old.
Yeah, 1998, that was America's first attempt at a Godzilla. That was directed by Roland Emmerich, and it shows...
The giant iguana.
Yeah. No, I've held for a long time. It's a perfectly fine monster movie if they just didn't call it Godzilla.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. Hank Azaria
mm-hmm.
is in it, and he's wonderful, and Matthew Broderick's fun. Yeah, it's kind of like my thing with Keanu Reeves doing Constantine is if they had just named it Bob Johnson, mm-hmm. it would have been one of my favorite movies of all time. But instead, they took a beloved blonde British character, they moved him down to California, gave him brown hair, changed his trench coat, took away his accent, and then cast Keanu Reeves.
Oh, yeah.
And I love Keanu Reeves. I do. And I even, like I said, I like that Constantine movie. The problem was, is that I had a completely unread run of Hellblazer from 1 to 250 when that movie was announced. And there was interest in my collection. People wanted to buy it for money. And then it was rumored that Sting was attached. And it was worth more money. Because, I mean, Sting, Constantine, the same dude. And then they announced that it was Keanu Reeves. And nobody wanted my collection anymore. And I really needed the money from selling it. I ended up selling the whole thing for $400. It was boo.
That's very tragic.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my grudge with that. Oh, so I was saying, Godzilla, the dark one.
Mm-hmm.
And then King of the Monsters is the one right after that.
Yeah.
So
it's actually, it's the next Godzilla movie. Technically King of the Monsters is the third in the MonsterVerse because Kong Skull Island came out after G14 and before King of the Monsters.
Oh, with half of the Avengers in it.
Yes.
Yes. No, I like that movie. Monarch.
Mm.
So, was John Goodman Billy?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Right. John Goodman's character is Bill Randa.
Okay. Okay. I thought that's what I was being told. I am just right on the tip of a spoiler right now. And so mm-hmm. I'm backing slowly away. But yeah, I needed to know that. And I figured if anybody knew it, it was you.
Yeah, I need to catch up with Monarch. I'm like one or two episodes behind.
It's, what did I tell Tiffany? I said, it's currently my favorite soap opera.
Because
mm-hmm. everybody's getting emotional and storming off. And one of the other ones is like, I'll go talk to him. And it's
Hey,
we're in the Arrowverse.
Yeah, no, every time there's a conflict, someone storms off, someone has to go talk to someone alone, it gets resolved because, you know, there's a means to an end.
Yeah, but I am loving every time it's live, I watch it that day, and then I kick myself all week because I don't have it to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
So, the first movie, Godzilla, this is me, this is you told me to take the gummy. So
oh,
this is your fault. Bryan Cranston. Second movie. Second Godzilla movie. Kyle mm-hmm. Chandler.
Mm-hmm.
They both were eating scenery. They both were just acting to a point of frantic
mm-hmm.
in that movie. They were both very, very yelly. I'm like, I don't understand what's happening right now.
Yeah, it's. I will never forget how much the marketing lied about Bryan Cranston for Godzilla 2014 because they made him out to be like a huge character and then he's gone within the first 20 minutes.
Yep. And he ate every fucking doorway between the beginning of that movie and his death.
Yes, you are very aware that Bryan Cranston is on screen when he's on screen. My wife died in there.
And then in this one, Kyle Chandler's like, yeah, I'm a shitty dad and husband, but I'm real angry.
Mm-hmm. It's like, yep, all the time.
Kill everything. Just kill it. Kill it. It's like, dude, sit down.
Chill out. Maybe he should have a gummy. Just sit back for a sec and watch Godzilla's intimidation display.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. See how Godzilla is subtle compared to you, Bryan Cranston?
The giant monster is the most subtle part of the movie.
Look at the acting choices he's making. He's just living the part, Bryan.
Yeah, and Godzilla, King of the Monsters, was the first time in the MonsterVerse until Godzilla X Kong the New Empire, where we got to see Godzilla at his full power, because it was confirmed that the EMP blast that the Mudos put off in G14 nerfed his atomic breath. I don't think it was ever explained how it did that, but it just kind of did. Yeah, I have a feeling it was because they got some complaints about how weak the atomic breath looked, and they were like, we should make it bigger and then just say that the Mudos nerfed it.
Didn't you know they made that change on purpose? All that had to do with EMPs. It's in the science. Yeah. You wouldn't understand. It's very complicated.
Yeah, and then we get the meltdown Godzilla, which is so awesome.
Yep.
When he does the big nuclear explosion, and you can see Mothra's wings in the big explosion because she gave him her power when she died.
Mm-hmm. Which was sad. Mothra was such a pretty effect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mothra. I really like how they did Mothra in that movie. Not to say that I don't like previous iterations of Mothra, but I do like that it's a little more kind of flowy and elegant.
Yeah.
And all of the monster sounds, just the noises they make, sound amazing.
Yep.
They're all super true to previous releases. I do think that Godzilla, the MonsterVerse Godzilla, has my favorite roar in any of the Godzilla movies.
Yeah, it's good. Every time I hear it, I'm like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just sitting on the, after I watched your movie last night, I had a little time before I needed to go to bed, and I just sat on my phone and just watched, Godzilla action scenes from the MonsterVerse.
Nice. Nice. I do.
But yeah, a fantastic movie. So much fun. I like that it doesn't take itself super seriously. It's not trying to be as, grounded as Godzilla 2014 was, or as super grounded as Godzilla 1998 was trying to be.
No, I'll give you that. I did enjoy it to the point where I wanted to see the next one with Mechagodzilla.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Godzilla vs. Kong.
Yeah. Yeah. And that one because of the podcaster whose name I can't remember.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he has the Titan Conspiracy podcast.
Yeah, that guy cracks me up. So I watched the new Empire, is it called?
Yes, that's the newest one before Godzilla Supernova comes out next year.
I could have done without Kong Jr.
Oh, Suko, I think is his name. Suka?
I don't know. The little monkey.
Suko, that's his name.
Yeah.
What's bothered me about Suko is, if I'm remembering correctly, Suko is supposed to be around the same age as Kong was in Kong Skull Island. So why does Suko look like a baby monkey, and why does Kong look like a full-grown monkey?
Yeah. Because that was not that long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were helicopters. Those aren't that old.
Mm-hmm. And I love the way Kong has kind of aged and grown in the MonsterVerse. Like in New Empire, he's grizzled. He's got the white beard.
Yep, yep.
He's got the scars all across him.
No, he does. He looks good. And the whole thing with the teeth cracked me up.
Oh, yeah, or they had to change his tooth.
Yeah. And all the other monkeys laughed at him. Okay, let's take a break. And when we get back on the other side, it's your turn to interrupt the fuck out of me. Sound good?
Sounds good.
All right.
In a world where MAGA is banning and burning books, it is a revolutionary act to read. It's Monday in America is a bold collection from the left show's J.M. Bell about politics, family, aging, and the uncomfortable truths we keep avoiding. No talking points, just real life in a divided country. Order your copy of It's Monday in America today for just $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. If you're looking to feel hopeful or inspired, or if you're just frustrated and unsure about where we're headed, this book provides a unique look at the life of a Gen X liberal, the challenges and victories, and the question, what kind of world have we built for our children? It's Monday in America. $14.99 at MondayInAmerica.com. It's Monday in America. Better to die on your feet than live on your knees.
What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
We don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
Hey folks, Jeff here. So, you want to start a podcast? Maybe you already did and it's just not going the way you thought it would. Well, here's the truth. It's not about the mic, it's not about the software, and it's definitely not just about posting episodes. It's about building a show that people care about. That's why I created the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy. It isn't theory and it isn't fluff. It's a step-by-step breakdown of what actually works. Choosing a name, choosing a topic, building your structure, growing an audience, trying to turn your podcast into a brand, and maybe even a business. If you're serious about podcasting, this is a good place to start. And if you're just tired of guessing, this is how you stop. Check out the Defenestrate Media Podcast Academy and build something worth listening to. You can find more information at theleftshow.com. Okay, so remember the problem we had at the beginning of the show where I didn't know how to start off the segment? Mm-hmm. I don't know how to start us off on the other side of the commercials.
Jump
either.
Back in.
And, you know, so maybe it is that we just jump back in. So, okay,
yeah.
Be cool. Play it cool. Yeah. And then the sign said, beat it, we're closed. Do you know the joke?
Yeah.
Do you know the joke?
Oh, I thought you said if I got the joke. I thought the joke was that there was no joke.
No, there's an actual joke. It's the actual punchline to an actual joke. It's what does the sign say on the front of a closed brothel?
Beat it, we're closed.
Beat it, we're closed. This is your fault.
That's fair.
Okay. April 12th, 1985. In that week, Space Shuttle Discovery Mission 51-D was launched, notable for carrying Senator Jake Garn, first sitting member of Congress to fly to space. I think at the time he was the oldest guy to ever go to space. Because he was old. And he was a Republican. And I've met him. He's an asshole. Well, he was.
Oh, okay. So the opportunity was wasted on him.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
As most good things are.
They really are. They really are. Heavy rains caused major flooding in Texas, forcing evacuations in Sinton and Odom. In Lebanon, Israeli forces began an unexpected withdrawal from areas in Lebanon. The Reagan administration countered China's claim that the U.S. Had promised not to carry nuclear arms on ships visiting China. That seems like a big deal. Anti-reservation riots continued in Gujarat, India, with student leaders refusing to talk with the government until detainees were released. Domestically, here in the U.S., convicted rapist Gary Dotson was returned to prison. Because for some reason, they let him out.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, the 80s was a wild time.
Clerical error.
They still let these fuckers out on bail. It's disgusting. We haven't learned a goddamn thing since 1985. Mm-hmm. A fire and subsequent burglary struck a feminist health center in Hollywood.
That's rough.
That is a dick move right there. No, yeah. You know what? Yeah. That was absolutely perfectly defined the first time. That is a dick move.
Dick move on the part of fire.
Yeah, well, somebody lit the fire.
Oh, somebody caught it on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a super dick move then.
Yeah, there was definitely a dick involved in that particular burglary.
No doubt in my mind.
Colleges in Massachusetts faced on-campus alcohol bans because of a lack of liability insurance. CBS Morning News highlighted a special on the fight against cancer and teased the launch of Sally Jesse Raphael's talk show. April 12th, 1985 also saw the release of a movie that fucked me up, Lady Hawk. This is often remembered as a fantasy romance, but I did another film analysis. Interrupt whenever you want. But beneath its medieval setting and supernatural presence, it's a story deeply concerned with isolation, timing, and the cruelty of proximity without connection. It also has a soundtrack that does not...
Okay, I'm glad we're talking about this early.
Alan Parsons. It's from he's the guy who... I don't know if you've ever listened to the Alan Parsons Project.
I have a little bit, like, here and there.
Yeah, but that was Alan Parsons. Please.
Yeah. Take it away. Okay. I turned this movie on, and I heard the opening synth track, and I was like, okay, a little bit weird for an opening. maybe this is just, like, setting the mood, I guess. Like, we're going into, like, a... I thought it was setting the mood for like a more like quickly paced kind of action film and not a romance with action involved.
Right.
And so I was okay with it. And then I think the part that kind of hit me was when, oh, I can't remember his name. The guard that's chasing Nevers and Gaston.
Yeah, I can't remember the other captain.
Yeah, the other captain. When he was doing the ride back to report to the Archbishop,
yeah,
that Nevers had returned, and it was just this synth pop across like a sweeping landscape with a horse going across it.
Did not belong, did it?
I was like, that was the moment where I was like, okay, this is jarring.
Marquette. It's Marquette.
Marquette, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very jarring. And then just to kind of have it like pop up after like a high intensity, like emotional scene, it was a little bit like having whiplash every like 20 minutes.
My favorite thing that does not belong in this movie is they do a scene towards about three quarters of the way through where Navarre is running towards the camera, trying to get his clothes off before he turns into a wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yep.
And then as he turns into a wolf, there's a little bring.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck was that little noise? Is Tinkerbell telling me to turn the page? Jesus Christ, that was just funny.
Yeah, that moment really got me. And just like how, because I feel like for a lot of the transformations, they were doing the best they could with what they had available at the time. Like, I will not fault them for trying their hardest to make the transition from human to animal look cool and interesting. But there is,
they obviously
didn't
have the American Werewolf in London budget.
Oh yeah. Not everyone can win an Oscar for special effects.
Right.
But yeah, when he was running at the camera, pulling his clothes off, and then he just turned into a wolf, like he kind of like just disappears from the background and appears as a wolf in the foreground.
Yeah.
And then it does that little tone. I think that was probably the most, aside from every time the synth track came back, was the most jarring moment.
Well, I mean, it's having a hi-hat and a snare drum in a movie that would have happened years, centuries before those things were invented.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
It's like, and it's just this side of disco.
Mm-hmm.
So close. Yeah. Yeah. I'm aware, Alan Parsons. It's the funniest part of the movie for me is the fucking soundtrack, because I love it.
Oh,
and
yeah, it was
so bad.
For as strange as it was very, like, oddly fitting. Like, it really leaned into it. And I can't remember exactly where it was in the movie, but there's a moment where the track is going, and then the audio just cuts out very suddenly, like in the middle of the track, and then there's a fight that happens that second.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was used really well there.
But, oh, okay. Yeah. No, I know at moment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, it being as weird and as jarring as it is, it works. It just works for this film.
Well, you've got Matthew Broderick with one of the worst accents in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just terrible. And I love Matthew Broderick, you know, I really do. But that was. He was trying something British, and I don't know what it was.
It was fun seeing Matthew Broderick in this, because I didn't know he was going to be in this. I try to go into the movies that you recommend, like, completely blind.
Oh, good.
And so I didn't know he was going to be in this, and then he popped up, and immediately, like a flashbang in my mind, I got the mental image of the "That's a Lot of Fish" scene from Godzilla 1998.
That's good. That's very good. Who else? Rutger Hauer. Just unbelievably 80s hot in this, Rutger Hauer.
Oh, yeah. I could absolutely see it.
Yeah. Playing Navarre. Michelle Pfeiffer, who I think is more attractive in this movie than just about any other movie she's done.
Mm.
It's something with that weird ass haircut that she had in it, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
She's just flawless looking. You had Leo McKern as Imperius and John Wood as the Bishop. And he creeped me the fuck out then, and he creeps me the fuck out now.
Yeah, I thought he was really good as the Bishop. Like, he kind of really leaned into, like, that sleazy, corrupt, religious character, and I feel like it fits so well.
He could have been a pope. A French pope, but a pope. And then Ken Hutchinson was Marquette, who I don't think is that great an actor, but has such an interesting voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, never. I can't do it. I can't get that much phlegm going all at the same time. And then stunt casting, Alfred Molina as Cesar.
Oh, yeah, that was very unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, because I could kind of recognize his voice, and I was confused for a little bit because I was like, is that Dr. Octopus
yep.
on the screen right now?
Hello, Peter. Yep. No, I do. Yeah, okay. If we're short, I'll come back to my film analysis. This movie hit me. It was 1985, right? I was 13, going on 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I'm young. I'm impressionable. I am full of confusing thoughts. I don't know who I am or what I'm all about. All I know is that I want to touch girls. And this movie taught me that love has to hurt in order for it to be like earned. And that if it doesn't, then it's not real. He says about what he saw in a movie about people that turn into animals.
No, I could definitely see how someone would get that from this.
Mm-hmm.
Like it does very much heavily play into like you'll know it's real because it hurts.
Yeah, it set up much like The Princess Bride, which you will be watching here pretty soon.
Oh, I've seen it. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, but you have to watch it again.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Always. I didn't need to watch Lady Hawk again, but I did it anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I got that fucking movie memorized. Walk on the left. God, I love that movie. No, so you've got Matthew Broderick playing Philippe the Thief. And he is convincing in that role. It's his, well, the only thing about Matthew Broderick that is not convincing to me is the accent.
Oh yeah. No, it's like the character was written specifically for him.
Oh yeah. It's like, you know, save Ferris Bueller's ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen Ferris Bueller?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to find movies you haven't seen. But I know that there are going to be some that you have.
Oh, of course.
Obviously. So what was your takeaway on this one when the credits came?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. I think it's just because I went into it, like I said, completely blind. So I thought it was going to be a little more magic centered.
Mm-hmm.
But I really liked how the magic was just kind of like the thing driving the plot and wasn't like, not everything was magic. There wasn't magic everywhere. Magic wasn't being used constantly. It was just this. And this seemed to be like the only instance of magic.
Yeah. Like it is a shocking thing,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, the Bishop Wizard. Or Wizard Bishop turned some people into animals because he's a dick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, and it makes, I think it's what makes Matthew Broderick's performance more believable is you are just kind of with him where it's like nothing else about this world is magic except this.
Yeah.
And it's very jarring. And I thought Matthew Broderick's performance was really good. I thought him kind of like talking to God throughout the majority of the film was very funny, and him kind of going back and forth on like being a man with honor and living without honor.
Yeah. I mean, really simple tropes handled in at the time, because it's obviously been done to death then as now. You know, but just simple tropes that work out and push the story forward without making you have to, let's be honest, think about it very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Yeah, it was. I liked it so much that it was a little shocking to me that this underperformed at the box office. 18.4 million against a $20 million budget.
Yeah. Yeah, this one got popular on cassette, on VHS.
Mm.
Very, very popular on VHS. The first time I saw this, you know the theater up on Highland Drive that's a carpet store now?
Oh, yeah.
I can never remember the name of it, but that's where I saw this movie. It was on the big, big curved screen they had in there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's where I saw that. That's where I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, and that's where I saw Empire Strikes Back.
That theater is where I saw the first Suicide Squad movie.
Oh, it was still a theater then, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was still a theater. I very distinctly remember feeling like that theater was on its way out because we were the only people in the theater. The floors hadn't been swept. There was popcorn and candy everywhere. We walked in a minute late to the start time, and the theater was dark with no movie. We had to go ask someone to start the movie.
Nice. Yeah. Quality operation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then I remember my friend having to leave the theater because he was laughing so hard at the part where, near the end, where Killer Croc goes, I live underground, y'all's just tourists, and then kind of scuttles into the water.
That was a bad movie.
Oh, horrible. And I feel like being in that theater setting really amplified how I felt about that movie.
It matched really well. The thing about that movie that shames me to this day is how many times I've seen it.
Oh, yeah?
Trying to find some redemption in it somewhere. All you have is Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, and in the other movie that she did where she played Harley Quinn.
Yeah, because she was in, that was Birds of Prey, wasn't it?
Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
Because in Birds of Prey, she got to play it like a woman in charge of her destiny and not something for all of us to treat as eye candy.
And yeah, that was a major problem I had with the film, is that this whole story was supposed to be Harley separating from the Joker. And she's still just kind of treated as like background noise. And so I liked that in Birds of Prey, she got to like kind of explore the character a little more. And I think it was just, I honestly feel like if that movie had just even a different director, I feel it would just be so much better.
I don't have a problem with Jared Leto. I don't think about him, and in a lot of stuff I've seen him in, he's just fine. You know, I don't didn't he win an Oscar
for something? I believe for this movie.
No, for something else.
Oh, I'm not sure. I do not like him. He is so creepy and weird. And so I really do not like him. So I don't keep up with what he does.
What do we got? Golden Globe for Dallas Buyers Club. Academy Award for Dallas Buyers Club. Screen Actors Guild Award for Buyers Dallas. That was a good movie, though. That was a really good movie. You ever see that one?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Not the happiest movie. But yeah, he's an Academy Award winner. You know, so, and in the, he's 30 Seconds to Mars. Isn't that him too?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, he's in 30 Seconds to Mars.
So I look at something like Morpheus and I go, well, you know what? We all deserve a bad one. Dakota Johnson's still hot, even though she did Madam Web. It's all going to be okay. And then he shows up as like the worst Joker of all time. And I still can't figure out what they were trying to do with him and why they made him like that. It didn't make any sense. You know?
No, I don't know. I think it was just, it was like they were trying to make the Joker edgy. which was very strange, and it just played like how some people in my high school viewed the Joker.
Yeah, wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Though I say that, I've got the shared to my Facebook wall right now. Let me pull this up so I don't misquote it. It's Joker in profile saying, "I'm American. I fucking hate Nazis. I'm a homicidal maniac, not a traitorous bigot." That's my Joker.
Was that the one where he... That's from the comic where he's looking at Red Skull? Is that the one I'm thinking of?
I honestly don't know. It's a single panel that I've been carrying around for years. But, I mean, it is what it is. So what else? Did I get anything else? Did I
That's from Injustice Year Zero. That's what it is.
Okay, yeah.
And then there's the other one where... because there's another one where... figures out he's been working with a Nazi. He says, "I've been working with a Nazi. That mask must be cutting off the oxygen to your brain. I may be a criminal lunatic, but I'm an American criminal lunatic."
Nice. Very nice. All right. Unless we finish reading my analysis, which I do not care to do now that I'm scanning over it. It's not as funny and not as deep as last week. Last week was something else, man. That whole thing about Republicans hating minorities was some of my best work ever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to go ahead and call this a show. We're going to go over to Patreon. At patreon.com/defenmedia, DEFEN Media, where every week that we record, we do a little special content over there. This week, Braxton and I, we're going to talk about music from our childhoods. This is going to be the first of many of these conversations because there's too much to cover. But we're going to do our best for the first one. So why don't you join us over Patreon, folks, patreon.com/defenmedia. Braxton, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, thank you. I'd love to see you all over at the Patreon.
Yeah, me too. But if we don't, something happens. You're in an accident or something, I suppose. Mm-hmm. TBI. We'll see you next week.
Yeah. See you next week.
Did you like the show? Join JM and Braxton on Patreon. Patreon.com/defendmedia. Each week they record, they upload additional content exclusively for the Patreon family. Patreon.com/defendmedia.